Good morning. May it please the court, Lawrence Levian for Blue Man Vegas. This is an NLRB unit case. I'd like to take some of my time, Your Honors, to actually look at the Blue Man Vegas show, since I believe it's critical to an understanding of the musical and performing roles of all of the performers, as well as to clarify the roles of the MITs and the other stage departments. What we've done, Your Honor, is we've made three still photographs from clips of Employers Exhibit 1 and mounted them on that one piece of paper. The first picture, the top picture, is from the third clip in Exhibit 1, and that is the live wire unto Utney. What you see there in the front are three band members, musicians, who are in what is called the live wire costume, performing with musical instruments that are unique to Blue Man Vegas, swords. And if you look at the clip, the swords actually make a musical sound. Behind the wire men are the Blue Men, and they too are performing and playing musical instruments. The left and right Blue Men have illuminated mallets, which they are striking against percussion blocks mounted on the sides of the stage. The center Blue Man is using illuminated shaker instruments. It's important to understand that the wire men never perform as Blue Men, and the Blue Men never perform as wire men. The second picture is called Rods and Cones, and that is the second clip on Exhibit 1. And what you see there are the three Blue Men in front also performing on BMV-specific instruments, PVC pipe backpacks. And behind the Blue Men, though it is not clearly visible in the picture, are the various band musicians silhouetted around the stage. The third picture is actually the first clip in Employers Exhibit 1, and that is called Opening Mandelbrot. That's at the very beginning of the show. And what you see there are the band members in costume, in full makeup, with illuminated and microphoned instruments performing in the show. So what is it that the three pictures show that we contend is relevant to this case? Firstly,
that was exactly the question I was about to ask.
Firstly, all of the performers are musicians, and all of the musicians are performers. The Blue Men are as much musicians as the band members, and the band members are as much performers as the Blue Men. That's illustrated throughout the clip. Secondly, as it relates to the unit issue in this case, you can see from this clip what we contend in our brief, that all of the stage departments support all of the performers, Blue Men and band members alike. For example, the wardrobe department supports the band just as it supports the Blue Men. If you go into the record, you will see extensive testimony from Laura Sill about the work and energy that is required to repair and maintain the wire man costumes, costumes worn by the band members. The electrics department supports all of the performers. All of the instruments performed by Blue Men and band alike are illuminated. The audio department supports all of the performers, since all of the instruments are mic'd as well as illuminated. And lastly, and most important to this case, the MIT department supports all of the performers.
Who supervises the MIT department? Do they have the same supervisors as the others?
The MIT department is supervised by Mr. McGinnis. The other departments are supervised by the HOD for their particular department. So every department has different first-line supervision. So the point here being that the MITs support all of the performers, just like the other stage departments, and the other stage departments support all of the performers, just like the MITs. It is an integrated, interrelated enterprise. I have limited time, Your Honor, so I want to focus on the factual issues in this case, particularly the inaccurate conclusions drawn by the NLRB from undisputed record facts. The NLRB claims that the MIT department does not have swings. That's correct. But the fact of the matter is other departments do not have swings as well. There's a very clear statement in the joint exhibit that the wardrobe department similarly does not have swings. The board claims that the MITs have separate skills. Correct, but so does every other department. You can again see from Laura Sill's testimony how technically skilled the individual wardrobe people are, not simply just in wardrobe, but in specific facets of wardrobe. Same with the electrics department. They're alleged to have separate workspace, that is the MITs. True, but so does the property department. So does the wardrobe department. So does the electric department. And perhaps most egregious, they're alleged to have separate cue sheets, or cue tracks, which is their process for going through the show. Accurate statement, wrong conclusion. Every single member of the running crew in every single department has their own cue sheet. So it is a difference without any legal meaning. And lastly, they're alleged to have their own substitutes. They do, but so do every other department. If you take a look at Exhibit 7 in the record, you will see that each department has substitutes who are unique to their department. So what we have...
Excuse me, but taking what the board said and what you've just added, it would seem that you would conclude that any of these six departments could be as plausibly left out of the unit as was the this actual division.
Your Honor, hypothetically, that's correct. In this show, none of the seven departments can be left out. This is not a situation where any one of the departments could be left out because the whole enterprise is so interrelated. But certainly, you can't leave out the MITs and leave everyone in. I would refer you to Mr. Timothy McDonald's testimony. He's the head carpenter. He is the union's lead witness. The head carpenter, as you may or may not know, is the individual with general oversight responsibility for the show. Mr. McDonald testifies that he does not even know one of the members of the wardrobe department because she works in the afternoon and therefore he doesn't see her. And yet the wardrobe department is deemed in, but the MIT department is deemed out.
I can't say for sure, but I've never heard of a case in which whether two employees see each other is taken into account in determining community of interest.
I understand, Your Honor, but the fact of the matter is that he does not work with these people. He doesn't even know this person. Lastly, I want to focus on a couple things before I sit down for rebuttal. The board claims there's no integration, no interchange, no connection between the MITs in this case with the other departments. I urge you to read Mr. McGinnis's testimony, particularly the joint exhibit. In no less than three places, and perhaps four, he indicates, first of all, that audio, video, and MITs all work together at soundcheck. He introduced in two other places how the MITs interact with the electrics department and the sound department during performances. And lastly, which the regional director ignores in its entirety, he discusses what occurs when the company goes on outside performances or gigs where they function as a single integrated unit with everyone doing everything.
By the way, Mr. Levin, the current configuration of the unit and the exclusion is the same, is it not, as it was at the prior venue?
The unit at the prior venue was a house contract, which included the departments that then existed. I do not know how many there were, but I do not believe there were six.
But it included everyone except every one of the Blue Man employees except those currently excluded.
Blue Man had no employees in those six stage departments. They worked for the Luxor. The only employees Blue Man had were the MITs.
Okay, but I'll rephrase it. The unit then included the employees of the hotel, I guess, doing all of the trades except the MITs?
Yes.
And is there any record that there was an untoward effect from that?
Yes, absolutely. The company moved from the Luxor to the Venetian for precisely that reason, and it's in the record.
To avoid that unit configuration?
No, to avoid, yes, to avoid the situation where it did not have integrated control over its entire workforce, absolutely. That is one of the reasons why it moved. Not the only reason, but absolutely, that's Ms. Groff's testimony.
What is it about the integrated control over its workforce that reflects on the unit determination, on the, how the unit should be?
They couldn't operate as an integrated whole. They couldn't operate the way they wanted to because they employed some people, the hotel employed other people, and they couldn't.
What is it that's relevant, though, to the unit determination that was
What's relevant is they couldn't achieve the integration that they now can achieve where they supervise all the people and move them around.
That's true regardless of the unit.
For example, they couldn't do an outside gig the way they now do.
Okay, well, that problem's been solved. So what is it that impugns the unit determination that carries over from whatever problems they had before? In other words, what you just said is they solved that problem by moving.
Yes, and then they were no longer restricted by the inability to control the other stage departments. Now they employ the stage departments.
And is so there anything they can about this unit determination that is inhibiting that control?
Yes, they will not be able to have the MITs interact in the same way with the other departments, which they now do. In other words, they won't be able to go out an outside gig and have the workforce behave the way it now does, which is everyone does everyone else's job. They will not.
Tell me, why would the unit determination affect that?
Because it's bargaining unit work. Once it becomes bargaining unit work, you're restricted as to who can do it without bargaining about it. You have somebody interfering.
You have to bargain about it, but once you're bargaining, there's nothing that says you can't agree on exactly this arrangement.
You can agree on anything, Your Honor. That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
All right. Any further questions? I'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Good morning. May it please the Court. Amy Ginn for the National Labor Relations Board. To start, while it may be interesting, particularly for those of us who have not seen the show, to have these photos presented this morning and the extra record description of what's occurring in them, it in no way meets the company's burden here, which is to show under this Court's precedent that the stage crew employee unit is truly inappropriate for collective bargaining. In making its unit determination here, the Board did exactly what it is supposed to do. For example, under this Court's opinion in Country Ford Trucks, it looked at the proposed unit of stage crew employees, and because that unit was appropriate under a community of interest analysis, it accepted that unit.
Didn't the ALJ in this case make reference to an overwhelming case being required to reject that proposed unit?
Your Honor, the regional director in this case cited to a case called Lundy Packing.
Yeah.
I cited to the board's decision in that case, which was later overturned by the Fourth Circuit. The regional director's citation to Lundy, however, was in support of his decision, not the basis for his decision. In looking at the Artie's decision first, there is a discussion of the community of interest factors, at which point the regional director concludes that the stage crew employees constitute a distinct and separate appropriate unit for collective bargaining apart from the MITs. The RD then does have a citation to Lundy, goes on, however, to cite to
a citation?
Has a citation and the language that you just described about the overwhelming community of interest.
Had that case been reversed by the Fourth Circuit at that point?
It had, Your Honor, at that point, Ben.
So we don't really
not enforced.
Know what the RD would have done had he been aware of the current state of the law.
Your Honor, it's not clear whether the RD knew about the case being unenforced or not. I think what's important here.
Well, we have to send it back.
Sorry. No, Your Honor, absolutely not. I think
Well, how do, you know, there's a Chenery problem, isn't there?
No, Your Honor. If you read the RD citation to that language, the RD does not then go on to say, although he has cited to that case, he does not go on to say here he's relying on that lack of overwhelming community of interest. He never says that he's relying on that in this case.
He just quotes it.
He just quotes it.
Yeah.
And he goes on to cite to and rely.
I mean, there are other things he didn't quote. That's what he quoted. Why shouldn't we infer that that's relevant to his thinking?
While it may have some relevance to his thinking, it's clear that it was not what he ultimately relied on in making his decision.
Why is that clear?
Because, as I said, he did rely on all of the community of interest factors and went through and listed those and analyzed them. He also then went on to rely on another case, overnight transport, which was enforced by the Fourth Circuit post-Lundy, in a case in which the Fourth Circuit said, okay, it's not, you know, we don't have a 9C5 or an extent of organization problem here. And that's the same as this case. There's not that problem here.
What about Studio 54?
Sure, Your Honor. Studio 54 is a public dance hall. It's in a building that was once a theater but has now been converted to, it's a broad, flat floor space. There's no sort of stage, although some of the employees.
Well, the same types of trades, though, at work, right?
Your Honor, actually, it's not all the same type of trades. These were not skilled jobs at issue in Studio 54. The record there showed that the employees had 10 to 30 minutes of training. Many of them were out-of-work actors there plying this trade, so they might also at some point do a job like changing a record on a phonograph or turning on a light board, but they were not craft employees in the sense of the employees in this case.
Can you help me understand, was there anything about the supervision of the MITs that was different than the other?
Yes, Your Honor, there is a difference in the supervision. The company at the time that they moved the show, they set up a supervisory structure for the stage crew employees that included a head of department. All of the heads of department then reported to a technical supervisor, Tom Studer, who then ultimately reported to the production manager, McGinnis. The MITs, however, reported directly to McGinnis. The supervisory structure for the stage crew employees, wherein they report to heads of department, has everything to do with their terms and conditions of employment. The heads of department do evaluations, they set up the schedule, they make hiring recommendations, they discipline employees, and they provide the direct supervision during the show. So all of the stage crew employees are in this supervisory structure with heads of department and with Mr. Studer that the MITs are not.
And what about compensation? Are they compensated differently then?
There is some difference in compensation. Some of the MITs are paid on a salary basis. All of the stage crew employees are paid on an hourly basis. In addition, the part-time MITs who were hired post-move are paid hourly, but they're paid at a lower wage rate than the stage crew employees.
And does that have any significance for the board that you have different compensation structures? What?
Yes, Your Honor. It's one of the many community of interest factors that the regional director and the board looked at here. The compensation, the difference in scheduling, not sharing the same sign-in sheet, the supervisory structure, and the history of collective bargaining with this unit. And one thing to reference the court to with respect to how the company views the MITs and the stage crew employees separately would be Employers Exhibit 2, which is their organizational chart post-move when they're at the Venetian. They have an organizational chart, and it just shows one box with the MITs with their subs listed beneath it, another box with all six stage crew employees in it and their subs listed beneath it. And it's clear from that one document is just one small indication of how the company does view these employees differently and how they are treated differently as the community of interest analysis
back
shows.
To Studio 54 for a minute.
Sure.
Is it fair to say that in that case, the excluded employees did have an overwhelming community of interest with the unit employees?
Your Honor, that's not at all the analysis that the board applied in that case. The board applied the standard community of interest analysis in that case and said that there's no separate community of interest, a separate and distinct community of interest for the petition for employees in that case, as in this case, there is a separate and distinct community of interest for the stage crew employees. With, with respect, just quickly, to this idea about the outside gigs that are going on, the only evidence the company points to in the record, because it is the only evidence, is the testimony of the production manager that anytime we have an outside gig, we all pack up together, we set up together, and we break down the set together. It doesn't say how often this occurs. It certainly does not say, as the company is represented here today, that they do each other's jobs or somehow help each other with their jobs. It's about the packing up, the setting up, and the breaking down, and that's all that's in the record.
Any questions? Thank you, Ms. Kimball.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good for Mr. Herbert.
Good morning. May it please the court. Michael Urban on behalf of the intervener, IATSE Local 720, and more importantly, the certified bargaining representative of these 40 employees who are the stagehand workers on the Blue Man Las Vegas production show. I wanted to, as this court is well aware, bring back to the court the point of where we are on this case, which is the representation election procedure. The NLRB's province is supposed to be for a prompt decision-making process that will allow for a unit determination election and then collective bargaining. Unfortunately, in this particular case, even though the employees in this case as early as January of 2006 and the March 2006 filing of the petition, followed by the May 25, 2006 election, which certified IATSE Local 720 as their bargaining representative, are here before this court some 19 months later, still without that representation and still without the ability to sit down and reach a collective bargaining agreement for their wages and working conditions. Now, there's been a lot of discussion about this court's province today. But the standard of review for this court is whether or not the NLRB, in certifying this particular unit, not a perfect unit, but this particular unit, was arbitrary or made a decision that was not based on a complete review of the facts. There's been a lot of discussion about the Lundy packing case, but the regional director, in making his decision, doesn't rely on Lundy as the only or controlling reason for his decision. What he says is...
Would you agree it was a reason?
I believe that he said Lundy, and if you look at the particular cite to it, he states that one of the things that he is to look at is the union's organizing effort.
What page are you on?
On the Lundy case?
Wherever you're quoting from or reading from, referring to.
On the decision of the...
It looks like J158.
Yes, that is correct, 158. But the point I'm trying to make is that he says that's only one of the factors, and then he goes into a complete community of interest evaluation on pages 157 and 158, and he also says based on the totality of the record. And I would point out to the court, if he was saying that the union's organizing effort would be controlling, then the heads of departments, which were also sought as part of this unit by my client, would have been included in the appropriate bargaining unit that he selected. But he did not. He excluded those people. He actually made a complete review of the record and said that on the community of interest evaluation, that this is the appropriate bargaining unit. And as I pointed out in our brief, it is the burden of proof at this juncture of Blue Man Vegas to show that that determination was arbitrary or contrary to the complete record. And that has not been met in this proceeding.
He says that Lundy support, he's reached the conclusion. And then he says that Lundy supports this result. So it's not clear that it does after it's been, enforcement's been denied. Then he says applying these principles, restating Lundy, pardon me. But then at the bottom of the page says, recent cases dealing with truck drivers and mechanics also support this result, overnight transport being the...
Correct.
So let me ask you this. If the board's decision in Lundy and the board's decision in overnight transportation support the result here, and then Lundy is denied enforcement, is there a distinction that preserves overnight as a relevant precedent for this case, or does the RD have to rethink it?
No, I don't think the RD has to rethink it, because I think it does preserve. The overnight transport case, as Ms. Ginn has pointed out, was post Fourth Circuit decision in Lundy. And the record here on its face says, I didn't just look at the union's organizing. I looked at the community of interest. I looked at the testimony. I looked at the supervision. I looked how these people were paid. And based on the entire record, I am making a determination that this is the appropriate bargaining unit. He does not, as this decision in Country Ford Truck says, he has not given overwhelming or controlling weight to the organizing effort of the union. He's talking about what is the unit determination that's been made by the board, and under your decision in Country Ford Trucks, the burden of proof is on the moving party here, on Blue Man Vegas, to show that that decision was arbitrary and not supported by substantial evidence. The record, if you just look at Mr. McGinnis's testimony as to what music instrument technicians do during the show, they stand in the band loft and they only come down if there is a emergency, a breakdown of a piece of instrumentation, a drum, something else. Yes, they do set up, but
if we thought the regional director was relying on Lundy as a factor, would you agree that we would need to send it back?
I do not. I believe that looking at that citation in Lundy, which if you look at the appellate court decision in the Fourth Circuit, does not overturn that you look at that. It just says you need to look beyond that. You can't make that the controlling factor. You can't make that the primary reason you make it a unit determination. All the regional director says here is it's one of those things.
I'm asking a Chenery question. I'm not asking.
Right. I don't think you do. I don't think you need to send it back. I mean, as I said at the introduction, it's been a long time. These people are entitled to representation and
that doesn't really show up in any of the cases as a relevant consideration.
But I think it is a relevant consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Urban.
Your Honors, you write decisions for a living, so I must leave it to you to determine.
It's not much of a living, but it's fun.
Just as mine is fun. You have to determine whether he relied on Lundy or not. If he did, at the very least, you have to send it back. I simply look at the way the opinion is structured. I look at the articulation. I look at the introductory phrases, which, having written some of these myself, I know what they mean. He absolutely relied on Lundy. And I would add, Lundy was decided by the Fourth Circuit in 1996. If he didn't know it was reversed, shame on him. Secondly, Judge Ginsburg, I want to address the issue of the Luxor and bargaining history. Bargaining history is not a relevant criterion here. Bargaining history is looked at in successorship cases, as you did in community hospital, and in accretion cases. There is no bargaining history here. So as a matter of community of interest, BMV should not, cannot be tarred or burdened with what happened between the Luxor and the union. Lastly, as to Studio 54, the board makes allegations completely without record support as to what this show is or isn't. And that is why we've asked Your Honors to take judicial notice of the 5 newspaper articles written in various parts of the country by neutral observers as to precisely what this show is. And in concept, in tone, in quality, it is Studio 54, certainly for a unit analysis. And thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Levine. Again, thank you, Mr. Urban. Case is submitted.